Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Okay, so today we're tackling a really potent piece of American literature, Flannery O'Connor's debut novel, Wise Blood. It came out in 1952.
Yeah, and O'Connor, she's fascinating. She's writing as this devout Catholic, but deep in the Southern Gothic tradition. It's quite the mix. Raw, sometimes, well, horrifying.
Exactly. And that mix, that juxtaposition, it feels really intentional, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. She wasn't just going for shock value with all the grotesque stuff. O'Connor felt that for the modern audience, the spiritually deaf audience, as she called them,
right,
you couldn't just whisper about faith. You had to shout. Use these huge, startling figures to break through all that secular noise.
So Wise Blood is like a tool to kind of chip away at modern ideas about faith or the lack of it.
Precisely. A precision tool, really, to carve away self-deception.
And the main focus of that carving is Hazel Mote's. From the get-go, you, the listener, you're thrown into his really unsettling journey.
A spiritual odyssey, but a really dark one. He's a war veteran, deeply traumatized.
And he's got this one single-minded mission. It's pretty wild. He wants to establish his own religion, the church without Christ.
Yeah, it's just exhausting to even think about. That level of energy poured into a negative. He's not just ignoring Christ. He's actively trying to, like, obliterate the whole idea. Sin, salvation, all of it. Through sheer force of will.
So our mission today, then, is to sort of unpack that journey, following Hayes Mote's from this angry denier, this anti-theologian.
To what he becomes at the end, which is something else entirely, a suffering ascetic almost.
Right. Because O'Connor really pushes this idea, doesn't she, that for some people, maybe especially those raised hearing the gospel, genuine, peaceful unbelief, it's just not possible.
It's impossible. The very attempt twists you into something else.
Okay, so let's dig into Hayes' internal conflict first. He's back from the war, carrying that trauma.
Yeah, but it's not just the war. It's also his upbringing. A lifetime of that really intense fire and brimstone preaching from his grandfather.
So his rejection of faith, it's not like a calm philosophical decision.
Not at all. It's a battle, a really terrifying fight happening inside him. He's running from something he seems horribly certain about.
And the conflict is between his intellect, trying to be modern and nihilistic.
Exactly. His mind is telling him, believe in nothing, be free. But then there's this other thing, deeper, instinctive, something he just cannot shut up.
And that's the wise blood the title refers to.
That's it. This innate knowledge, almost like a gut feeling about spiritual truth that his brain just can't argue away. It knows.
So he's basically at war with himself.
Completely. And you see it the second he gets off that train in Tawkenham, this fictional city she creates.
He wants to just disappear, right? Blend into the city, leave the past behind.
That's the plan. But it doesn't quite work out that way. The world, or maybe O'Connor's world, pushes back immediately.
Yeah, the irony of his appearance.
Yeah.
He buys this dark suit, the hat.
The preacher's uniform, the very thing he hates.
And because he's so intense, so, you know, self-righteous about his unbelief, everyone keeps mistaking him for a preacher.
He's marked, visibly, whether he likes it or not. He can't escape looking like a man of God, even while trying to destroy the idea.
And his own gospel, his anti-gospel.
Yeah.
It's all about inversion.
Totally. He says, I'm going to preach the church without Christ.
Where the blind don't see and the lame don't walk and what's dead stays that way.
It's a direct point-by-point reversal of the miracles in the gospels.
So the big takeaway here for you, listening, is just how central Christ remains for him to fight something that hard.
You have to keep it right in front of you, obsessively. Hayes Mote's isn't Christ-free. He's what O'Connor called Christ-haunted, deeply haunted.
And that haunting fuels this really bizarre journey, this sort of anti-pilgrimage, starting with the car.
Ah, the Essex, that piece of gent car he buys.
It's so important, isn't it? It becomes his pulpit, literally. He preaches from it.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's the symbol of his whole philosophy, self-reliance, material reality.
His line, nobody with a good car needs to be justified.
Ah.
Why?
It replaces grace, salvation, with just having a working vehicle, material security as the ultimate goal, autonomy.
And while he's preaching this from his car, he starts running into these other figures, these really distorted versions of faith.
Mm-hmm. Corrupted faith everywhere. And the first one, maybe the saddest, is Enoch Emery.
Enoch, the zookeeper. He's so lonely, so instinctual, almost animal-like. He operates on his own version of wise blood.
Very much so. Socially clueless, just driven by these weird impulses. And he latches onto Hayes. He thinks Hayes is the leader he's been waiting for.
It's like Enoch represents that raw, directionless spiritual yearning.
Exactly. And his story runs parallel to Hayes's, but it's a devolution. Hayes is fighting God with his intellect. Enoch just kind of slides downwards.
Following pure instinct.
Which leads him to that museum and the mummy.
Oh, right. He steals this shrunken mummy.
Believing it's the new Jesus for Hayes's church.
It's just the ultimate grotesque parody. A dead, shriveled thing instead of a living savior.
It shows what happens when that wise blood, that instinct, has no moral framework, no real spiritual guidance. It just leads to absurdity, emptiness.
Then Hayes meets Asa Hawks and his daughter, Sabbath Lily. This gets even darker.
Yeah, Asa Hawks, the fake blind preacher. He claims he blinded himself with lime for his faith, an act of extreme sacrifice.
And that claim, it actually appeals to Hayes, weirdly enough, even though he hates faith.
Well, Hayes might despise faith, but he seems to value integrity, authenticity. He's drawn to the idea of such a radical commitment, even self-mutilation. He respects the supposed follow-through.
Even as he's repulsed by the faith itself.
Right. And then there's Sabbath Lily, Hawks' daughter. She's just immoral, manipulative, purely carnal, really.
So Hawks and Sabbath, they're like two sides of corrupt religion. The fake performance of holiness and just giving in to base desires.
Perfectly put. Calculated virtue versus raw appetite.
But maybe the ultimate symbol of the spiritual emptiness Hayes is raging against is Hoovershotes.
Oh, Hoovershotes. Who rebrands himself as Ani J. Holy, the ultimate opportunist?
He sees Hayes's anti-gospel not as a genuine struggle, but as a product, something to sell.
Exactly. He wants to commercialize it, make it palatable, easy. He sets up his own fake church of the Church of Christ without Christ.
And hires a double for Hayes. Solace Layfield.
Right. A simple guy who just mimics Hayes.
Yeah.
This sanitized, profitable nihilism faith that demands nothing. That's the real void Hayes is fighting. Not God, maybe, but this cheap, empty substitute.
And seeing his own genuine, painful denial get twisted like that, that's what pushes him to the breaking point.
It has to. He fought for what he saw as an authentic right to deny God, and now it's being cheapened, turned into a gimmick. His whole worldview starts to crumble fast.
It unravels quickly. Yeah. First, the truth about Asa Hawks comes out.
Yeah, Sabbath Lily tells him her father's a fraud. He chickened out, never actually blinded himself.
So the one act of radical faith Hayes grudgingly admired was all a lie.
Total lie. And that hypocrisy, plus seeing Layfield, his cheap copy, walking around, it's too much.
He snaps. He confronts Layfield.
And runs him down with the Essex. Violently.
It's brutal. Like he's trying to physically purge the world of this fake version of himself, this lie.
It's his ultimate act of rejecting falsity, but the second he does it, his own foundation collapses.
Because right after, the Essex itself is destroyed.
Yeah, just like that. A random cop pulls him over, says the car's unsafe.
And just pushes it off an embankment, smashes it. His symbol of freedom, autonomy, gone.
And this moment, it's strangely pivotal. The cop, just doing his job, enforcing mundane rules, he unintentionally delivers this, like, devastating blow. It's almost like an act of grace, weirdly.
How so, grace?
Well, it shatters Hayes's illusion, his reliance on the car, on his self-made independence. What's left when your material idol, your vehicle for rebellion, is just rubble?
So what does he do?
He does the one thing that's truly horrifyingly authentic. He goes and blinds himself. With quicklime.
The very thing Asa Hawks only pretended to do.
Exactly. The irony is just immense. The man who spent his life denying Christ, denying redemptive suffering, performs this incredibly violent act of self-mortification. The genuine act.
His flight from God turns inward into this brutal form of penance.
Undeniably. It's a terrifying but real spiritual act. It's the turning point.
And after that, he changes completely. Stops preaching.
Utterly. He becomes the silent figure, an ascetic. Living in pain, he wraps his chest in barbed wire, walks with rocks and glass in his shoes.
He chooses real suffering over any kind of pretense, even the pretense of denial.
And meanwhile, you see Enoch Emery's parallel journey reach its own sad end.
What happens to Enoch after the mummy thing?
He gets rejected, obviously, so he attacks some guy in a gorilla suit who's promoting a movie.
Steals the suit
and just wanders off in it. He literally puts on the skin of an animal, embracing his purely instinctual nature.
Wow, so that's the end point of life without any spiritual dimension, just animal existence, meaningless.
That seems to be O'Connor's point with Enoch, utter emptiness. a dead end.
So if we circle back to Hayes, his final state really highlights that theme you mentioned, spiritual blindness versus physical vision.
Absolutely. By destroying his physical sight, he gains this other kind of sight, spiritual insight. Agonizing, yes, but real, he got it by crawling on his knees, as his landlady says.
It fits O'Connor's idea that true vision, spiritual vision, might mean rejecting the purely empirical, the rational world Hayes initially clung to.
Which brings us to that other really challenging theme, the violence of grace.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Grace isn't gentle in O'Connor.
Rarely. She suggests it often takes trauma, loss, self-destruction even, to break through our pride, our self-deception. Grace has to crash through the walls we build.
Hayes had to lose everything, even his eyes, to finally see.
It seems so. And his end is still tragic, complex. He resists the final attempt by the secular world to kind of domesticate him. His landlady, Mrs. Flood.
Right. She sort of romanticizes his suffering, wants to take care of him, possess him almost.
And he dies trying to get away from her out into the storm.
And that final image, Mrs. Flood looking into his dead eyes.
Unforgettable. She sees, or imagines she sees, this pinpoint of light receding, moving towards some vast, mysterious distance, his unseen destiny.
It's ambiguous, but it feels like O'Connor's way of saying he did achieve something, some kind of revelation, however brutal.
Yeah, a state beyond Mrs. Flood's comprehension.
So, ultimately, Wise Blood is a fierce challenge to modern secular thinking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It argues that trying to live without the spiritual doesn't lead to freedom.
No, it leads to violence, dislocation, self-destruction. O'Connor insists the human heart is built for something spiritual. You can't just switch it off.
And maybe even the most intense rejection of faith is still a form of faith, a twisted, painful kind of devotion.
That's what Hazel Motes seems to prove. Fighting God with everything you have might just be the hardest, most painful path right back to the very thing you tried to escape.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.